It's time!
The ego rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the chance!
Nate Diaz!
He's done it!
It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rosella, you're trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of faith!
We're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
My name is Travis Hayden. Welcome to another episode of Pound for Pound, guys. Oh, it's a big fight week. I'm joined today by Ryan Deptula.
Yeah, we finally made it onto the podcast. It was some technical issues.
It was a struggle, but we finally made it. Ethan is with us today in spirit. Ethan is producing right now. He is in the back. And let's just get right into this. We have UFC 322 coming up this weekend. Card of the year. But we're going to get into this in a little bit. So, Ryan, it's the MSG show. It's our annual MSG show.
Yeah.
And do you know the history of how hard it was for the UFC to get into New York?
I don't know that level of history. All I know is that we are in New York, so it's a topical.
We are in New York.
Topical.
But it's a crazy story, actually. 49 states decided to legalize MMA. Guess what was the one state that was the last state to legalize the sport of mixed martial arts in the United States of America?
Context clues are telling me New York.
Context clues are serving you correct today. It was New York, and the reason why it might shock you. The old owners of the UFC, under Zuffa before Endeavor bought them, Lorenzo Fertitta, they own the casinos in Las Vegas, and they used ununionized chefs. And the Culinary Union was mad about that, and because they knew they owned the UFC, they blocked the UFC from coming to New York for years. Until the head of the union was arrested for some shady allegations, let's just say, and they decided to undo it. They were like, okay, look, we're going to legalize the sport. And so we'd had the historic UFC 205. In my opinion, one of the greatest cards of all time. First ever Madison Square Garden card. When you look back at it, from early prelims to prelims, it was stacked. There was a total of 10 champions, past, present, and future, that were on that card that day. Jim Miller kicked off the prelims against Thiago Alves with the unanimous decision, which it's 9 years later, and he's still doing it, and he was doing it for 9 years before that. We got to give credit to Jim Miller, most fights of all time in the UFC.
Wait, you're telling me that Conor McGregor was the first ever MSG card?
Yes, it was.
I did not know that.
Right. We're going to get into that. On the prelims, this seems a little tough to think about, but guess what? Vicente Luque decided to knock out Bilal Muhammad. And in 2025, that is an insane statement to think. Because there was a point in time, I would say around 2021, when Bilal Muhammad and Luque looked like they were both going to be in title picture. And they fought each other again. Luque was a huge favorite because he had knocked him out at UFC 205. And then...
Eye poke involved in that? No, that was
Leon Edwards.
Leon Edwards.
That was Leon Edwards, but Bilal won decisively and began his path to the UFC welterweight championship. So this was the setback before the come-up for Bilal Muhammad, because he would eventually go on to beat Luque again.
And this is the come-up before the setback for Vicente Luque.
This is so funny, because as we, I'm going to go into some of the other things. Raquel Pennington, future champion, defeated former champion at that point, Miesha Tate, by decision. Miesha Tate decided to retire after that fight, and she decided to come out of retirement in 2021. All-time great women's fighter, two all-time great women's fighters, two former bantamweight champions of the world. Oh, we're on this card. Yoel Romero versus Chris Weidman, the flying knee.
Yeah, that's great. I love Chris Weidman. Last time I saw Chris Weidman fight, he snapped his leg, and then I know he fought after that.
He fought a couple times after that, which was surprising. Yeah. But this was Chris Weidman's first fight after losing to Luke Rockhold almost a year before. And people thought, and he fought Yoel Romero, and he was doing good the entire fight, but he decides to go for a takedown in round three, and he gets met by a flying knee. And he calls out Yoel calls out Bisping, who's the middleweight champion at the time, and he's in the commentary booth. They're doing something. They're giving some gestures to each other. Yoel says, "See you soon, boy." And it was history from there. Yoel Romero began his ascent. That was his first win over a major champion like that. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, in my opinion, the most fun women's fighter of all time. I call her the Queen of Violence. Defeated her fellow Polish woman, Karolina Kowalkiewicz, to continue her reign as the strawweight women's champion. Tyron Woodley and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson won for the welterweight championship of the world. Started as a... It was a draw. But if you ever watch what happened after that, Tyron Woodley gets called the winner, even though it was a majority draw because one judge had the scorecard for him. So Bruce Buffer goes, "And still, and your winner, and still, Tyron Woodley." And Bruce Buffer, Woodley celebrating, and Bruce Buffer goes, wait a minute. And then he calls Woodley back, and Woodley's like, thinks he's about to lose the belt. He's like, what's going on? He thought so. And then it was like, never mind, this fight is a majority draw.
That's the worst result.
Well, they did the rematch, and the rematch was not as good, and Woodley barely squeaked out that victory.
Yeah.
But that was fight of the night at UFC 205. Frankie Edgar defeated Jeremy Stephens on the prelims. And
that's a fun classic, two classics.
It is, and it also for UFC 205 at the press conference, I cannot say what was said to Jeremy Stephens, but this was the press conference where Conor McGregor said that thing to Jeremy Stephens.
Who is that guy? I think is what Conor McGregor said. What did that young man just say? And
the hardest hitting 145 pounder.
He was the hardest hitting one.
But yeah, so Frankie Edgar defeated Jeremy Stephens in that one. But then there's one more prelim fight I want to go over, because Conor McGregor at this point was the featherweight champion, and he was coming off his two fights to Nate Diaz. He was originally supposed to fight Rafael Dos Anjos for the lightweight championship and become a double champ, but Rafael Dos Anjos pulled out with a foot injury. And that's how we got the Nate Diaz fights. Eddie Alvarez was supposed to fight the number one contender at that division. Instead, they thought, who's more of a contender? Who would more people want to see fight? Conor McGregor or the number one contender in the division? So they undeservingly gave the title shot to Conor McGregor fight Eddie Alvarez.
Of course we'd rather see Conor McGregor.
Well, hold on one second, though. Because the guy who was supposed to get the title fight ended up fighting on the prelims against Michael Johnson.
And that is... The Eagle?
That is the Eagle, Khabib Nurmagomedov, and that was the first time he called out Conor McGregor after that win. So this was the start of this McGregor.
This is like the Garden of Eden of UFC.
It really is. This kicked off a whole era. And then the main event, Conor McGregor knocks out Eddie Alvarez in the first ever UFC MSG show to become the triple champion.
One of the greatest title fight performances of all time.
I agree.
In front of an MSG crowd. First time New York ever sees it. It's Conor McGregor. And they see, I mean, if you want to argue a 13-second knockout is better, I don't agree. I think this is probably the best performance of his career. It's seamless. It was a seamless performance with unmatched technical ability, unmatched speed, unmatched like complete sniping power. Weaving one like millimeters out of punches, finding the spot is unreal.
This was the peak of Conor's career. Yeah. This was where his career, we could look back at it now in 2025. He hasn't fought since 2021. Double champ that night at MSG, the first ever time we saw an MSG show. That was the peak of his career.
Yeah, the double champ is here. That was the whole double champ thing.
So that was in 2016, and since then it has become the yearly tradition outside of one year due to the global pandemic, 2020, to go back to the Garden and to go back.
It's usually a November thing.
It is always a November thing.
Yeah.
So, and then the next year, if we talk about UFC 205 being historic, UFC 217 will go down as the top three greatest cards of all time.
Talk to me.
All right. So I'm just going to read off this main card right here, and this will be everything we need to know. The rising Paulo Costa took on former champion. There was how many former champions were on this one? We had a lot of former champions on this one as well, and he took on former welterweight champion Johnny Hendricks in what would be his retirement fight from the UFC, where Paulo Costa was on a tear. He was knocking everybody out. Nobody was being able to last with him. And Paulo Costa continued his ascent on the opening of the main card, knocking out a guy that we thought was going to take over after George St. Pierre left the welterweight division. He won the title, lost it after a defense. He won the title from Robbie, and then he lost it to Robbie Lawler. But Johnny Hendricks is one of those underrated legends all time that we got to unceremoniously say farewell to.
Yeah, because Paulo Costa's uprise, he was a complete dog.
He
was a complete dog. Paulo Costa, you know, in a fight against Johnny Hendricks, like,
Mind you, Johnny Hendricks, we are
placing respect on Johnny Hendricks' name here.
I think he's one of the most underrated legends of all time because Johnny Hendricks was starching people at welterweight, and he started missing weight too much. There's some things that he was doing that got banned, more of IVs, and that was.
I think the uprise of Paulo Costa, though, I mean, it feels like fighters go through phases in their career, and that phase of Paulo Costa's career, there was not much that could get in the way of his
at that time. And then it would take another almost 3 years till he would run into Adesanya, and that would kind of derail. The next fight, though, however, Stephen Thompson versus Jorge Masvidal. So Stephen Thompson is coming off his rematch from Woodley at this point, and you'll see that MSG has a few staples. There's guys that are always going to fight there. As we'll go through this, you'll see this. So Stephen Thompson defeated Jorge Masvidal. And Jorge Masvidal, after this fight, he won 30-26, 30-27. Jorge Masvidal would then take off 2018. So this is the end of 2017. He would take off 2018 and come back and have arguably one of the great highlights of 2019. He'll have one of the greatest years of all time after this. So this is the fight that indirectly started Jorge Masvidal's rise.
Yeah, I mean, Jorge Masvidal's rise, he was once one of the big... He was once one of the biggest stars in the sport.
We're going to get into that one in a second because... All right, I'll tell you why we'll get it. I'm going to skip over that just a tiny bit.
Trust the process.
Just trust the process on that one. I don't want to interrupt you. But that was the start... Like, that was Jorge's last loss before the rise. We'll get into the rise because that's a later MSG card.
Yeah.
There was three title fights on this card. And three title changes, all finishes. And each one of them is historic in their own right. As you hear in our intro, Thug Rose. Joanna Jędrzejczyk comes back the next year to defend her strawweight title at MSG against Rose Namajunas. And knows Rose Namajunas, insane first round knockout over Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
Yeah, absolutely absurd. I think Joanna Jędrzejczyk is probably my favorite woman fighter of all time.
I would say so,
and
too.
And honestly, everyone's favorite woman fighter of all time.
She should be everyone's favorite women's fighter of all time, the way she fought, and her career end against Wei Li, too. But Joanna had six title had a lot of title defenses, and then this was the last time she defended that title. She would end up losing to Rose. Historic. We still use the call in our intro today.
Yeah.
And then in the co-main event, TJ Dillashaw versus Cody Garbrandt. Cody Garbrandt is coming off the masterful performance against Dominic Cruz. He is going against his old teammate in TJ Dillashaw, who left them. As they all say, TJ Dillashaw at Team Alpha Male was the snake in the grass that left and used Elaine Ludwig. They had a whole season of The Ultimate Fighter where they just beefed the entire time. There couldn't have been more bad blood between Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw going into this fight. Cody Garbrandt is dominating the early part of this fight, and TJ Dillashaw knocks him out in round two.
TJ Dillashaw, knockout in round two. Another underrated fighter, in my opinion, is TJ Dillashaw. However, he is the snake in the grass, and I feel like that's kind of an uncontested opinion.
It was a very sticky...
He's also a snake in the grass because he cheated and uses PEDs. No? TJ Dillashaw? That was
to cut weight to get down the flyweight.
But we're not going to excuse the use of banned
substances. Henry Cejudo was the end of that. TJ Dillashaw was one of the most technical fighters of all time. He was one of my favorite fighters to watch. It was really sad how his career ended, I thought.
I hated watching him with the shoulder.
With the visibly injured shoulder.
With the fighting with the shoulder out and then putting it back in mid-fight.
Before the fight even started, that shoulder was out.
And then he put it back in during the fight and then kept fighting, and then it came out again.
At least he got to go out in a title fight, I say.
I guess you could excuse it. I will say that.
But that was just very one of the sad ones to watch. But that was TJ Dillashaw's crowning moment. He became a two-time champion that night. And then we get to the main event, which so many people remember. Michael Bisping versus the returning George St. Pierre. People thought George St. Pierre submits Michael Bisping in round three to become the middleweight champion. Finally, he wins a third title in another division, though. He becomes the middleweight champion. And people don't remember this, but there was an interim champion at that time, too, that got passed over so Michael Bisping could fight George St. Pierre.
Yeah, but, I mean, George St. Pierre deserved that spot.
He did,
Because he's literally the GOAT, essentially.
George St. Pierre injured his back during the training that fight, and he vacated it the next month. So this UFC 217 is looked at as a moment of time where George St. Pierre came back for one night to win a championship. And it was very cool. And the worst thing I think about this is we never got that unification fight between George St. Pierre and Robert Whittaker. That would have been so much fun.
I mean, George St. Pierre, it seems like he could have done anything in his career. I just feel like Michael Bisping is obviously probably one of the most beloved figures in mixed martial arts.
Well, at the time, he wasn't.
Yeah, I know, and that's what I'm getting to. Right now, he is. At the time, he played the villain in that role. Everyone loves George St. Pierre. Everyone loved and loves currently George St. Pierre. And he played a bit of the villain in that role. He probably, you know, he's a smart guy. He probably dug into that role a little bit. He knew what he was doing. But, to see George St. Pierre come back and return for like a little one-timer, but just kind of show like, guess what, I'm the GOAT still.
After four years too.
Yeah, just be like, you know, I'm the GOAT. I'm still the GOAT. And there was references of him doing that again against Khabib when they were trying to make Khabib come back. We all would have loved to see that.
That's the ultimate dream fight, in my opinion.
And I think that might be the ultimate dream fight. And honestly, I mean, we don't need to turn this podcast into predict Embiid versus George St. Pierre, but I would have taken George St. Pierre.
I'm not too sure.
I don't
like the hypothetical matchup of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's sad that we only have the hypothetical matchup to
it. It's not a conversation I like very much.
Then let's fade it.
nothing to do with that. I just don't want to see either of those guys lose, and that's the thing.
I'm not the biggest Khabib. I'm not itching to see Khabib win every fight.
And I know you called me Unk UFC fan, but there was something energy to that.
I feel like we've seen this new update in UFC fighters. And I'm not calling you Unk UFC for saying Khabib is great, because he was great not too long ago. But it seems like not too long ago in UFC time is long ago. And I'm starting to see updates in these characters. I'm starting to see Islam Makhachev going toe-to-toe striking with Dustin Poirier while also being a wrestler of Khabib's caliber. And I'm starting to see Ilia Topuria just knock out people we once thought were the greatest fighters like of all time with not even really no issue about it. Volkanovski, KO, whatever.
He was coming off a 3-month.
Yeah, all right, but this is a new update here. I think we've seen a new update in UFC, and I think this has nothing to do with GSP and Khabib because they're old update, but they're old gen, but new gen.
Well, Khabib and GSP aren't even the same generation when you look at it.
That's
like,
true.
They're not even the same generation as well. Khabib is a generation, maybe even two generations after George St. Pierre, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree. But at the end of the day, like seeing someone like Khabib, if he stayed in the sport, I don't imagine him holding on to his undefeated record, especially in the face of the new gen, which is no disrespect. I mean, I see the same in every other sport. I don't think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would have been playing as good against Victor Wembanyama or anything. I just feel like that's how the sport progresses. So I feel like, you know, for some reason, I feel like GSP adapts better to the modern era.
I feel like that too. And then you know what's funny? There was a guy named Joe Rogan who had the same opinion as you on that, but he had the most delusional opinion on it, where he once said that Jorge Masvidal beats GSP.
That's the worst take of all time.
He said Jorge Masvidal and Gilbert Burns beat GSP.
No, I feel like we were hyped up, we as in Joe Rogan.
Because of the evolution of the sport.
Yeah.
But Jorge, like, GSP is the reason why the sport evolved. He was a karate kickboxer that decided to wrestle halfway through his career and became the best wrestler. If you've ever seen the Josh Koscheck fights, he decides, there's two fights. There's one, Josh Koscheck is like an all-American wrestler. In one of the fights, he just jabs his eye out the entire time for five. Like, he just jab, 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 beats him, wins decisively. And in the other fight, he wrestles him completely. And Josh Koscheck, this wrestler that's supposed to have better wrestling than George St. Pierre, this Canadian kickboxer, is getting out-grappled and outclassed in the grappling department by George St. Pierre. So we have to have that discussion that George St. Pierre might be the greatest. Like, he's the reason why people are so well-rounded today in mixed martial arts.
I think he might be... You're right, and I've said John Jones is maybe the greatest of all time, but with the PEDs involved, George St. Pierre is your pure is my pure king here. And he has kind of an unmatched, and I don't mind a couple losses on your record here. Like, this is a tough sport. A couple losses on your record could sometimes prove that you locked in, and he avenged them, which
both of them
certainly helps. But it proves that
out Matt Sarah and Matt Hughes.
If you never lose. I mean, I'm not going to hate on people who never lost. Obviously, you're amazing for never losing. But there's something to losing and knowing well that you push your limits at every part of your career. Like, I don't know if John Jones' fight against even Dominic Reyes, in which he borderline lost. But, like, was that, like, are you pushing your limit in your at that point in his career when he was fighting Thiago Santos? Or, like, I don't know if he's put, like you weren't in danger of losing. So, like, your undefeated record... It's great.
Split decision fight against Thiago Santos, by the way, with a torn ACL.
Yeah, so it's, you know, you have an undefeated record, and even Khabib, I mean, you have a great undefeated resume as well, but were you consistently pushing the limit of your career and your ability throughout for years throughout multiple eras, like GSP did, who came back and defeated a champion and as recently as 2017? No, so... There's a great argument, and maybe one that I could even buy.
John Jones also took 3 years off and came back and won a title a weight class above. So,
well, he's also kind of the GOAT, and that's a whole nother case. But I'm just trying to hype up George St. Pierre.
That
for this
is
time.
True, and he got his moment at Madison Square Garden and got to retire on top, even though we thought it would be the start of something new. It turned out to be the end of the chapter. The next year, the UFC was struggling for UFC 230 because at UFC 229 was Conor and Khabib. And as we know, that's one of the most stacked, greatest fight cards of all time, historically. So they originally the fight was supposed to be Dustin Poirier versus Nate Diaz in the main event.
They should do that to this day, but you know,
Dustin is
regardless.
Done. But what happened was they decided during that press conference to announce Conor versus Khabib.
That's yeah.
And Nate Diaz, as the video was playing for the Conor Khabib hype video, walked out.
Yeah.
And he did not fight Dustin Poirier. So they were scrambling for a headliner. And the headliner was, by the way, Chris Weidman loses in MSG again. He faces Jacare Souza, and they had the fight of the night. The opening of the card was Israel Adesanya versus Derek Brunson, where Adesanya arrived in the top 10, knocking out Derek Brunson.
Two fighters that ended up having pretty good careers, like even Derek Brunson.
Well, Derek Brunson had already had a good career up until that point. Derek Brunson
that's true. He's old, but you know, he continued on to have a good career.
He continued on having a good career after that, even though Adesanya just went on to become, in my opinion, the greatest middleweight champion since Anderson Silva.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But the main event was Derek Lewis was coming off his knockout win over Volkov. And everybody was having Derek Lewis fever after that post-fight press conference, post-fight interview.
We still have Derek Lewis fever in our
and
way.
This is when they decided to give Derek Lewis an undisputed title shot against Daniel Cormier.
Derek Lewis versus one of the greatest fighters of all time. How does this stack up?
This was made 3 weeks before the actual card. There was no headliner. This was literally made right after UFC 229 because Dana White needed a headliner. And DC said, let's do it. Derek Lewis said, let's do it. So we have a fun fight. Like, UFC 230 provided us with a fun fight between two of the most fan-favorite fighters of all time. That, granted, ended in a Daniel Cormier's submission victory and his only defense of the heavyweight title before he would lose it back to Stipe Miocic the next year.
Yeah. Just kind of a funny fight based on its premise. Daniel Cormier versus Derek Lewis. It feels like we all love Derek Lewis, but it feels like Daniel Cormier is in the class of greatest fighters of all time, and Derek Lewis is in the class of people I like to watch on my TV very much so, and I like to watch them speak after their fights about how their body parts are hot.
All right, so now the next year we're going to move to UFC 244 in 2019. Canelo was fighting during the same night, by the way.
Yeah, and he had to sit on his couch. He delivered a great knockout that night, though. No disrespect to Canelo, one of my favorite fighters of all time.
Canelo had to sit on his couch and wait for the fight to wait for this card to end.
Didn't affect him.
So, we have Kevin Lee knocking out Gregor Gillespie, which is one of the sickest knockout you'll ever see in your life. Yeah. If you want to wonder where Kevin Lee fits into this conversation, this is where Kevin Lee fits in. He had one of the greatest knockouts at UFC 244.
Last thing I knew about Kevin Lee, he was fitting into the Khabib fighting championship equation.
Well, that was the whole thing. Everybody asked, where does Kevin Lee fit into the... And then he would go on to lose to Charles Oliveira after that. Derek Lewis got a nice victory, a split decision victory. Stephen Thompson continuing his New York run. Yeah.
Is he fighting this weekend?
He's not.
I didn't think so, but he was making me question it for a second.
He makes his third appearance at MSG by defeating Vicente Luque. Darren Till moves up to middleweight and gets a split decision win over Kelvin Gastelum. And this is where Corey Anderson, Johnny Walker is a great knockout. Edmund Shabazian started his run against Brad Tavares, where we thought he was going to be the greatest middleweight of all time and maybe dethrone Adesanya, because Adesanya's champion by this point.
Yep.
The main event, we have the BMF fight between Jorge Masvidal and Nate Diaz.
And The Rock is coming out?
The Rock is coming out.
The Rock. This is The Rock fight, anyone is wondering. I always had nothing to do with The Rock.
He put the belt around Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah, I know he was there. I mean, the fight itself. Maybe The Rock should be in the UFC, but that's a different conversation.
That is
a little power bomb off the top rope action.
I am not getting into that conversation.
Okay.
Jorge Masvidal defeating Nate Diaz, though. This was the peak. So we always talked about that was the peak of Conor McGregor. But now we have the peak of Jorge Masvidal, where Nate Diaz, granted, the fight ended kind of iffy. Diaz couldn't come off the stool. The doctor stopped it because there was a cut over his eye.
I still disagree with that
stoppage. I do, too, because if you ever watch a Diaz brother fight.
Yeah, exactly. That's every fight.
It's actually, there's something in their genes with their scar tissue in their eye that they just get cut up easier. Nate's going to get cut up in the first minute of the round.
Yeah, I mean, have they never seen that photo of him flexing in front of a camera covered in blood?
It's just what happens.
That's his stuff.
That's just what happens. Well, as soon as he gets punched
in
the face.
Is this because it's New York?
That was a lot of the questioning going into that was because it was New York.
Yeah, I mean, they're a little soft.
So Nate Diaz had just came back after a 3-year layoff. He had came off a win over Anthony Pettis, and he called out Masvidal. Masvidal going to take it as a big money fight because Masvidal's coming off the flying knee over Ben Askren. And this is what propelled Masvidal into superstardom. And it's so funny because I'm going to go back into the story about UFC 251. We're going a little later. This is in Dubai, but this is during the pandemic. When Jorge fought Usman for the first time.
Yeah, with the foot stomps.
Yes, with the foot stomps.
Yeah.
But Jorge was the straight set number one contender for that fight, right?
Yeah.
And you know that fight was not Jorge Masvidal and Usman.
Yeah, he was coming in
as a late replacement.
Yeah, late replace.
Because the UFC didn't want to pay. The UFC wasn't paying enough for it. So they were like, "All right, if you're not going to do this, we're going to give the title shot to Gilbert Burns." And then Gilbert Burns ended up having to pull out because he got COVID.
Yeah.
And Jorge steps in on 6 days notice, which...
That's a big storyline in that fight that he liked to point to as if it was kind of an excuse. We later saw what happened.
We later saw
it. If anyone's ever seen that glorious photo of the sweat spurting off of Jorge Masvidal's face as he gets viciously knocked out. A little bit to hate on Jorge Masvidal, but for no reason, essentially. But
UFC 244 was the night where that's the peak of his superstardom. Where that's the night he became a star was Ben Askren, what he did to Darren Till in the three-piece in a soda and all that. This is the night that solidified his stardom with the big win over Nate Diaz. He would go on to lose two straight title fights and lose the rest of his career. But he went out as a star.
Yeah,
he did. That's what I'm saying. He went out as that fight, the UFC 251, was the biggest card that, like, pay-per-view buy rate. That was not Conor McGregor done this day.
Yeah, Masvidal and Usman have something. Usman used to have something to him, too, and that's an underrated aspect. He used to be kind of a star in the sport. And him and Masvidal were great. And their second fight was one of the greatest cards I've ever seen in my entire life. But
So at UFC 245 the next month, Kamaru Usman fought Colby Covington in Las Vegas, and he won via knockout.
That's an awesome fight, too.
So, and in 2020, we had a global pandemic. By November, we had no card for MSG. So, we're going to look to UFC 268. So, this is, personally, my favorite card of all time. This is the first card I ever attended. And when you look at it from top to bottom, it's one of the most stacked cards. Like, in hindsight, looking back in 2025, this card was stacked to the gills.
This card is stacked to the gills. They're sneaking in.
Dustin Jacoby's
sneaking in Justin Gaethje.
Dustin Jacoby is on the prelims. Ode Osborne is on the prelims. A debuting Ian Gary knocks out Jordan Williams in the first round on the early prelims. And Chris Barnett defeated Gain Vellante with a spinning heel cook.
Vellante's retirement fight.
That was the big boy spinning heel cook, heel kick. I couldn't believe what I had watched when that kick landed.
Yeah, that was
I was going crazy.
And then he's emoting after. It was a whole
You also want to talk about a prelim card that has aged so well.
You had to be there.
A prelim card that has aged so well. Nassourdine Imaev, the number one contender at middleweight, defeated Edmund Shahbazyan by TKO. Something we didn't, like, now he's the number one contender and he's next to fight Khamzat for the title.
And he's great, too. He's not, like, a bad contender.
He's a really great contender. Chris Curtis defeated Phil Hawes by knockout in a very entertaining fight. Ally Quinta was retired by Bobby Green. Ally Quinta didn't look like he belonged. He had taken a few years off after during the pandemic and everything, and he came back just to retire at MSG.
Yeah, I mean, seeing what Bobby Green / King Green has done recently, Ally Quinta was not equipped for this fight because Bobby Green is not.
Well, Bobby Green would then go on from this fight to fight Islam Makhachev in the next fight.
What a great matchup. And that didn't end up well.
Oh, no, he would actually fight one more time in between. He would fight Nasrat Haprov, who just got knocked out.
Yeah.
He would win that by a decision on February 12th, and then 2 weeks later, he would fight Islam Makhachev. He stepped in on short notice to fill in for Beneil Dariush.
I remember praying for an upset in Bobby Green versus Islam Makhachev just because it would be so funny. My prayers were not answered.
And then Andreas Mikhailidis.
I think he's Greek. Andreas Mikhailidis.
Actually says he's from the Soviet Union. Oh, fighting out of Athens, Greece, though.
Yeah, I remember that.
So he fights a debuting up-and-comer, and he's looking very good in the first round. He got a few takedowns. He's laying on top of the guy, yada, yada, yada. And then, unfortunately for him, he is fighting a debuting Alex Pereira. And Alex Pereira lands a flying knee knockout.
From hell.
onto him. And it was that was the start of something. We'll get into that in a second, actually.
The start of something. More UFC New York lore.
We'll get into that in 1 second because I just want to go over the main card first. We're going to do I just realized, because this is for later. We had Justin Gaethje defeating Michael Chandler in the opener because it was the fight of the year. Trevor Whitman had 3 fighters on this card. He goes 3-0. We'll get into that in a second.
Yeah,
so this
Trevor
fight,
Whitman.
This fight opened early, so he would have time to coach Rose and Usman later.
They switched his spot on the card.
Yeah, so it'd be the opener, and this was the fight of the year.
Yeah, it was
hands
awesome.
Down. Yeah, you knew it as soon as it was announced. You have a prime Michael Chandler who's coming off his loss to Oliveira. It looked like he was going to be the champion. You have Justin Gaethje who's coming off his loss. He hadn't fought in almost a year.
He's violent. So
he hadn't fought since his fight with Khabib.
These guys are both violent.
And
Michael Chandler wasn't like an established violent person for his whole career, kind of. And then now, once he went to the UFC, he was really engaging in some great violence.
So I have the camera. I have my phone was out the entire time for that fight. I have that entire fight on my phone. Like it's like I'm recording a high school fight in the bathroom, like shaky camera. I'm screaming.
Yeah.
My favorite memory in all of MMA is me watching Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler go to war for 15 minutes. My only regret in this fight, the worst part about this fight, is that it was not 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Because somebody would have gone to sleep in that last second.
It's cool that they dropped the 25-minute co-main event update recently.
Well, they only...
Not that this would have been in it, but...
Honestly, cool. This would have been... They started that this year actually with Nate Diaz and Leon Edwards.
It was a completely new update.
Yeah, but I don't know why they couldn't have given it to that fight. The 25-minute co-main event had been established in 2021. The first fight to ever do that was Leon Edwards versus Nate Diaz.
Yeah, and it was. I think it's because people wanted to see Nate Diaz go 5 rounds. Is what it was.
Which let's be honest, that fight is hilarious to look back in hindsight, and that is the fight that Leon Edwards got his title fight over.
And we all know that Nate Diaz low-key won it in the hearts and minds of the people.
If Nate Diaz doesn't stop and point and goes to finish the fight.
He probably doesn't.
Who knows where we would be on our MMA timeline right now. Maybe in 2025, Kamaru Usman would still be your welterweight champion of the world's defending.
Maybe in 2026, we have Nate Diaz.
Maybe this weekend would be Kamaru Usman versus Islam Makhachev. Who knows?
It'd be Nate Diaz versus Islam Makhachev. Can we see that one?
So
that kind of reminds me of Kevin Holland versus Hazmat Chimaev. Like, those are two weird fighters.
Shane Burgos defeated Billy Quarantino Tello. This fight was also a barn burner. Most at the time, I don't know of record at the time this happened. I don't know if it is as of now. Most strikes ever landed in a UFC fight, in a 3-round fight.
I did not know that. I'm a big fan of Shane Burgos.
They came off of Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler, and they landed the most strikes ever in a UFC fight.
Burgos is in PFL now, no?
Yes, he is.
I know he got...
That was one of the things Dana said that he regretted. Like, he was like, yeah, we screwed up not signing him.
Because I think he won something in PFL.
Yep.
I don't know. But also, more Shane Burgos lore for no reason at all. Really one of the most interesting knockouts against Edson Barbosa when he, like, kind of delayed, falls over.
Yeah, yeah. That was actually the media fight after this.
Yeah, that's a strange fight.
I remember watching that one. That was UFC. That was in May of 2021. That was the same night Oliveira became champion. We had a classic Chito Vera performance against Frankie Edgar. Frankie Edgar's in New York, and everybody loves Frankie Edgar. Frankie Edgar is winning the entire fight. Chito Vera is doing nothing for 2 rounds, and then somehow he drops him in round two. Chito drops Frankie Edgar in round two, goes on, front kick knockout. If you've ever seen the photo of how Frankie's face looked when that happened.
Deformed individual in that one.
Yeah, it's a very interesting sight to see. And then we get the rematch between Rose Namajunas, Zhang Weili, split decision after Rose, because Rose lost the title to Jessica Andrade. Jessica Andrade lost the title to Weili. Weili defended against Joanna in that fight, in the greatest women's fight of all time. And Weili loses it to Rose at UFC 261. And Rose defends it against Weili.
Yeah, and a bit of a snoozer.
No, this one wasn't a snoozer. No.
I thought it was a snoozer. I thought this one was a bit of a
snoozer. No, Rose losing the title to Carlos Esparza was a snoozer. Okay, a couple months later.
Also, I think we haven't pointed out this theme. Thug Rose has been New York City card for like the third time.
This is Thug Rose's second time, I think. You're thinking of Carolina. Joanna was on too. Carolina and then Rose.
I thought Rose was against Joanna and Zhang Weili, but I thought she had another one in like the prelims.
She didn't.
I'm tripping.
And Kamaru Usman defeated Colby Covington via decision. In the building, I was sitting next to two Colby Covington fans that knew him and played poker with him.
Yeah,
they were cheering "Let's go, Colby" the entire time. And based off sitting next to them, it's so weird watching a fight from high up in the stands and everything.
Yeah,
because I thought Colby won. I thought Colby won, and when they announced "and still" for Usman, it was the most shocking decision of my life. I was like,
"Really?
What just happened?"
But when you rewatch it, I rewatched it
the next day, and I'm like, "What was I thinking?"
Yeah, it was pretty clear.
That's a fight.
It was a great fight
that lives. That's gonna go down in history. They say Colby didn't get a takedown on him. He did get a takedown.
He did get a takedown on
him. He did get the first takedown on Kamaru Usman. Don't let the media tell you it's Leon Edwards. It wasn't. If you have eyes and you watch the fight, it was Colby Covington. But this is my all-time favorite card of all time. There's no hate I can ever spew towards it in my life. It's just historic. It's stacked.
It is stacked. And you went there, so I'm sure there's no bias involved in that decision at all.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on to the next year, we go from 268 to UFC 281. This was a very interesting card. We have Karolina Kovacevic on the prelims again, and this is years later. This is 6 years after the first time she had the title fight. Moicano defeated Brad Riddell on the prelims. Ryan Spann knocked out Dominic Reyes in 80 seconds, and that was the end of that was Dominic Reyes' last knockout loss.
Yeah, I have a friend who randomly hopped on the Dominic Reyes train before his fight with Yuri Prohaska, and we watched it live, and he was really on this Dominic Reyes train, and we witnessed Dominic Reyes get spinning elbow knockout, gruesomely knockout of the year, and from then on his career went downhill. And it's just so funny, this guy was like, dude, I watched all these YouTube videos about Dominic Reyes and his career went nowhere after it. It was so sad.
Well, it almost came back for the last year or so, but unfortunately Carlos Ulbricht put an end to that one as well. We had the end of the hype against Molly McCann. Meatball Molly, this was the end of her hype train when Aaron Blanchfield, who was fighting Tracy Cortez this weekend, she'll make a return at MSG as well, submitted her in round one via Kimura. Dan Hooker got his first win against Claudio Pulis in a while. He was on a losing streak. He had gone down to featherweight. He got knocked out by Arnold Allen in a minute.
Yeah, that was bad. And I don't know if he belongs down there, though.
Well, he didn't, and now Dan Hooker, I think this is when his winning streak started. He has been on a winning streak since this fight.
Yeah, I mean, he dyed his hair and he got a cool tattoo. I mean, we all knew he was going to come back. All right.
Yep, Chris Gutierrez retired Frankie Edgar this night with a knee knockout. It was kind of similar to the, it was except there wasn't a flying knee to the Sandhagen one, but he hits him with a knee and it was over for Frankie Edgar's career. He retires.
I think I remember the discourse around this one was like, oh man, Frankie Edgar, bro.
And he, at least Frankie Edgar, he knew to hang it up at that time.
Yep.
We had another fun fight. We had Dustin Poirier versus Michael Chandler.
Fun fight is like an understatement. This is like one of the best fights ever.
Fish hooking accusations. There's cheating. There's you blew your nose on me. They were still going at it after the bell rang. Dustin Poirier gets a second round submission. Michael Chandler would take 2 years off until he would come back eventually at another MSG show. We'll get into that later. We still got two more years before we even get into that one. Again, amazing fight otherwise. Zhang Weili is also building up her MSG resume, too.
Yeah, she's starting to...
This weekend could be an historic one for her as well.
Yeah.
She defeated Carla Esparza after Carla Esparza defeated... Mind you, I think when you look at probably some of the worst UFC champions of all time, Carla Esparza is on that list.
Yeah, it's probably...
But you know what? You know what holds
her? A couple
her?
Bad ones.
You know what holds her off from being like the ultimate bad UFC champion?
Jamal Hill? No, I'm joking.
Not Jamal Hill.
I'm joking.
It's the fact that she won the title twice.
Yeah.
Because she was the inaugural women's strawweight champion, and guess who she beat for that title?
I don't recall.
It was Rose Namajunas.
Oh yeah, that.
And she lost the title to Joanna in 2015. 7 years later. She wins the title from Rose again.
It's a pretty respectable career. Granted, she's just kind
of
trash.
The second Rose fight was one of the worst fights I've ever seen in my life.
Nothing happened. We all need a nap time in between UFC fights sometimes.
It was before Oliveira and Gaethje. So.
Yeah, so we were wide awake for that one after taking a good old snooze.
That was one of the worst. But Zhang Weili, she had her reign as strawweight champion that just came to an end because she decided to vacate and move up to flyweight. Get into that one later. And then here it is. We talked about it earlier. We have 3 years in a row. It's the story of Alex Pereira. We have the debut, and we have the title win. 1 year later, he wins the middleweight championship. He knocks out Israel Adesanya.
Yeah, this was awesome. And Israel Adesanya was kind of winning the entire fight until Alex Pereira throws a left hook, of course. It's typically how fights end. So that's typically how any Alex Pereira fight ends, is usually with a left hook. It was one of the coolest fights. Great aura in that fight. Some beef. Some dark magic allegations. I think that came from Prohaska.
Well, yeah, I was going to say.
No, wait. It came from Adesanya.
No,
Adesanya was
giving. No, Jiří Prohaska was the dark magic allegations. So let's move 1 year later to UFC 295.
Yeah, we could talk about the dark
magic. Where Alex Pereira defeats Jiří Prohaska to win the light heavyweight championship of the world. He loses back the belt to Adesanya. He moves up one more weight class. And this is now becoming the story of Jiří Prohaska. Not Jiří Prohaska, of Alex Pereira. This is where Alex Pereira has cemented his MSG resume. He debuts 1 year, wins the middleweight championship 1 year, wins the light heavyweight championship the next year. That's got to be so impressive. Back to back to back.
Which card is this one?
UFC 295,
yeah.
Benoit Saint-Denis, if you've ever seen it, he treats Matt Frivola's head like it's a football and that he is punting it. He chases him from across the octagon and goes, boom.
Oh, I've seen this whole card.
Matt Frivola, Diego Lopes opened up against Pat Sabatani. Great win. Steve Ursek got his title shot when he was on his way to getting a title shot. Joshua Van is on the early prelims right now. Jared Gordon had a TKO victory. Jessica Andrade knocked out our current champion, Mackenzie Dern, which I remember way too vividly for dumb reasons.
I liked Jessica Andrade at the time. And she seemed like she was pretty powerful.
Do you remember what the original headliner for this card was supposed to be?
No, I do not.
Do you see that co-main event?
Sergey Pavlovich and
Tom Aspinall.
Yes.
For the interim UFC heavyweight championship?
Oh, wait, was this supposed to be a John Jones versus...
This was supposed to be John Jones versus Stipe Miocic.
Yeah.
And as I've told the story a million times, I've been on one-on-one, I've talked about it. We've talked about it way too much on this car because of what's been going on with Tom Aspinall, where John injures his shoulder and he doesn't want to fight anybody else other than Stipe, and he doesn't want to fight anywhere else other than MSG because he had never fought at MSG before. So he takes a whole year off, and he comes back at UFC 309, where we actually get John Jones versus Stipe Miocic.
Yeah, but first, I mean, we can't get over the main event here of Alex Pereira and Jiří Procházka.
It started the magical run.
Yeah, it did. It was
These
are the dark magic allegations born.
These are the dark magic allegations born. The only reason why I'm going a little too quickly right now is I want to get into this last card, which was last year, because we also have to do our preview for 322, which is coming up.
Yeah, I mean, not really deserving of a deep dive. I mean, listen, it ended in a left hook. It was awesome, as they typically do. Next card.
He beat him twice. We've gone into the whole Alex Pereira magic a lot. We've gone into that whole story, but John Jones defeats Stipe Miocic by spinning back kick.
That was really cool.
Will he come back? Will he not come back? The world may never know.
I hope. I think it's kind of an underrated victory, though. It's not like Stipe, he lost recently, but it's not like he was... I don't know. You got to give him some respect.
I like giving Stipe Miocic respect. Let's see here. So, you know, I'm a little... Like, this would have been my senior year of college if I'd done a traditional college route, right?
Yes.
You know, when was the last time he had fought before that?
I know he got absolutely blasted by Francis Ngannou. I don't know when it was, but
that was my senior year of high school. I hadn't graduated high school by the time he fought this fight yet, and he hadn't had a fight in between. And you're a big NBA guy.
Yeah,
you know that.
NBA guy.
We know you love ball.
I do love ball.
What do people online talk about, like, when we talk about the past and we're trying to say somebody's better? What do they say about, like, the people like Chamberlain or Russell or Jordan?
We're done,
like,
with the 90s?
No, or Jordan. No. What do they call the people they played?
Plumbers.
Firemen.
Yeah.
John Jones beat a fireman.
Yeah,
at that point in his career, he wasn't the greatest heavyweight.
For those who don't know, actual fireman.
Stipe Miocic was the UFC heavyweight champion of the world and a full-time fireman.
Yeah.
At the same time, which is great. But he took 3 years off, 3.5 years off, hadn't had a single fight just to get the rematch for the heavyweight title. People were over it. Like, John Jones fought a fireman at this point.
Yeah.
And John Jones was chasing this imaginary dragon that was Stipe Miocic.
He was trying to, like, hype up Stipe like it was, like, some legend fight. It kind of was, but, like...
It was, but it wasn't at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, you want to talk about chasing a dragon? Look at this co-main event right here. Because Michael Chandler chased the dragon, and to this day, he is still chasing that dragon that is called Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
Where Conor McGregor had to take... He took 2 years off of his career chasing the Conor McGregor fight that never came along.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a tragedy. I think it recently came out that his wife told him, like, you're losing your mind over this Conor McGregor fight. You need to lock in. This isn't who you are.
Yeah.
I think I saw that quote recently.
And guess what? He still is losing his mind as he's calling him out for the White House right now.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that's going to happen. I wish it would, though.
It almost happened, but Conor hurt his toe. We had the fight date set, but honestly...
It was pretty bad. His toe looked rough.
It did, but I will say this. I'm happy with what we got, where we got more Alex Pereira magic, where he knocked out Jiří Procházka for a second time.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have gotten more Alex Pereira magic if that hadn't happened.
Yeah, we're still here for the black magic. We're going to let it go.
Always here for Alex Pereira black magic. Bo Nickel, this is the fight where we kind of started to question, is he really our guy? Because he defeated Paul Craig. Not very impressively.
In a third round decision.
And you had guys like Ty Bora, Jim Miller, Marcus McGee, Jonathan Martinez. You had some decent storylines and fights going into this card. It's not one of the more memorable ones. It's mostly built around. Oh, this was also Chris Weidman's retirement fight, I think, too. He was supposed to fight, but then it got moved to the next month pay-per-view.
Mickey Gall lost a fight on the early prelims. Mickey Gall fought CM Punk in a fight, he almost got taken out of the UFC for it, I think. No?
No, Mickey... No. That was so... Hold on.
I'm pretty sure...
Mickey Gall beat CM Punk and Vince. Okay. I don't want to talk
he
about...
He did fight against CM Punk.
He did. No, he was CM Punk. It was Mike Jackson that almost got taken out of the UFC.
Okay, never mind. But he beat CM Punk in a fight, essentially. That's the lore behind that.
Can we not talk about the best in the world in a negative effect right now?
All right, we'll keep it rolling.
I'm just gonna say this.
Let's move to 2025.
He should have never. You can't get me started on the best in the world.
Yeah, I hear you.
Neon lights. Okay. sorry. UFC 322 is coming up this weekend. Ryan has me thinking about CM Punk's failed UFC run that should have never happened, and I'm not happy about it right now.
It sounds like you're in his cult of personality.
You don't even want to know how many CM Punk hoodies I have. Right. Okay. I was about to wear one today.
Next one. Next pod.
So we have Jack Della Maddalena and Islam Makhachev. Islam Makhachev moves above Khabib into the top five pound-for-pound GOAT conversation if he wins this fight.
Oh, for sure. Moving up a division and winning is probably the greatest achievement in MMA, I think, moving up a division. And I think Islam Makhachev carries that weight with him, and I think he's ready to go in with JDM. JDM is a new champion. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but I think he's a respected championship.
Well, he won the title in one of the greatest fights. One of the greatest welterweights. Granted, there's so many great welterweight title fights, but that was also one of the greatest welterweight title fights I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was an amazing fight. I think people have respect for JDM. He's not some bum champion. I think people like him.
I think so, too. And then I said this for a class, a little assignment I was doing. This whole card is going to shape the future of the welterweight division.
Yeah, for sure.
You have the former champion, Leon Edwards, taking on Carlos Prates. Carlos Prates, that spinning back elbow was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen against Jeff Neal.
Yeah.
And you have Leon, who's coming off two bad losses.
Yeah, this is, the writing is on the wall here for the Leon loss.
But then you also have Carlos Prates, who can define himself as against a legitimate champion.
Yeah, I think the writing's on the wall, though. I think Prates. Leon might be done here.
We have the title eliminator fight, and I don't want to jinx this one like I did with Volkov and Almeida. But Sean Brady and Michael Morales should be the number one contender for the winner of the main event.
Yeah, I think they're both ready to go. Both got
18-1, 18-0, and Sean Brady's only lost to the former champ.
Yeah, and he was a good champ. As much as I am not remembering.
Well,
he was
Bilal Muhammad was a one and done as well.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because welterweight's usually the division where you see people hold the belt for a little while. Woodley, Usman, Leon had two defenses. Usman had a few. Woodley had three.
George St. Pierre.
The really only one and done you could think of was Hendricks. Robbie had like two. Had two of the greatest fights of all time as his defenses.
Yeah, did he fight McDonald as a defense?
The Rory McDonald fight was a defense.
Yeah, that's
and
sick.
Then the Carlos Condit fight after was just as good. You have Benil Dariush and Benoit Saint-Denis. I don't know what is up with Benil Dariush. Can surprise you sometimes.
He could. He could give you a spinning back fist and then in the post-fight prelims try and say a prayer for all those victimized by Marxist ideologies. I remember that. I remember that fight. I'm like, what
was
is this guy talking about?
That was after he beat Tony Ferguson, by
Benil
the way.
Benil Dariush, define what that means for me.
I was not happy when he beat Tony Ferguson.
I wasn't either.
He lost to Charles Oliveira and Armin Sarukian, and he took a year and a half off, and then he came back and beat Moicano this year. He was a huge underdog going into that fight. Moicano does have a win over Benoit Saint-Denis, but Benoit Saint-Denis had been rolling since that fight. He was injured. It was in Paris.
Yeah, Benoit Saint-Denis, he's pretty cool. He's been taking a little dub run.
Kyle Daukaus is back in the UFC. He was gone for a few years, and they re-signed him back, and he knocked out Michel Pereira. Very interesting on what happened with that one. He's fighting GM3, and GM3 is a guy, you never know what you're going to get with him. You're going to have some of the most entertaining fights of all time. The Edmund Shabazian fight is another one I think people should check out because this guy, he's 37-20. And you just wonder, he looks awful at some points in a fight, and then he'll look like a completely different fighter 2 seconds later. And he'll somehow pull off a win. You don't know how, but he'll pull off a win. And he fights around two or three times every year. And he's just a guy I can't get enough of, and I'm so happy to see he's still fighting, and I can't wait to watch fight this weekend.
Speaking of guy I can't get enough of, Bo Nickel's on this preliminary card.
Yeah, he is fighting Rodolfo Vieira, and this is going to be very interesting as well. We're going to see where Bo Nickel really stands in the middleweight division.
That's ironic, by the way. I don't really care about – I don't think Bo Nickel's very good.
Well, RDR was too much too soon, I think.
Potentially.
You got Bo Nickel, who's
he's not young.
He's 29, but at middleweight that could be young.
I suppose he's supposed to be he was an all-state wrestler or all American, the best wrestler in America for Penn State, I think.
And he came in on a roll, and then he was, mind you, actually, Bo Nickel and Rodolfo Vieira both have second round submissions over Cody Brundage.
So, this is a decent little opponent here.
I'm excited for Kapilov and Gregory Rodriguez. Gregory Rodriguez is coming off a huge knockout win over Jack Hermanson, while Roman Kapilov is coming off a very disappointing loss to Paulo Costa. We're going to see where they both stand if they're in the 15, around like number 15 range of the middleweight division.
So I feel like Valentina Shevchenko and Zhang Weili has been our understated fight so far.
Well,
we're going to get to it.
I was waiting to get to it. I wanted to give that segment of a little bit of its own time to shine. I wanted to
start it. Give it. I'm going to open the floor for you then.
I wanted this fight to be. I need to explain the significance of this fight. You have Valentina Shevchenko, the undisputed queen, and Zhang Weili, the number one and two pound-for-pound women's fighters in the world. I don't care who you have as one or two. The question will be answered this Saturday. Weili Zhang has started her title run in 2019. She lost the title for the strawweight title, and she won it back. And she just started racking up wins over all the strawweights. Valentina won her title in 2018. She had fought Nunes before. She was a bantamweight. They made the flyweight division. She went down. That became her division. Nobody else's division but Valentina until Alexa Grasso fought to a draw. And then the third time they fight, she dominated and proved that she was still the best. She was coming off the close fight against Fiore back in May, the same night JDM won the title. But you have two women I never thought we would see fight. I never thought I would ever see Weili move up a weight class.
This is a bit of a super fight.
This is the women's super fight. And it's so funny because I want to call this the biggest women's fight of all time, which at this point now, I would say it is. But in a few months, it's going to get overshadowed by Kayla Harrison fighting a returning Amanda Nunes,
yeah,
whenever that will be.
That's going to be the biggest fight.
That's going to be sure. The biggest. Cause
I mean, you also had like Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm was arguably probably the biggest.
Well, Ronda Rousey.
Or Amanda Nunes.
Any Ronda Rousey fight was the biggest women's fight of all time at that point. But I'm talking about in terms of skill-wise.
Yeah, skill-wise. Peak.
Ronda was a pay-per-view draw, and nobody could deny that. She was doing millions and millions and millions. And to bring up a little CM Punk's reference right here.
CM Punk part
two. When you
two
look
reference.
In Valentina Shevchenko's eyes, what do you see? You see the woman that has been the pound-for-pound women's fighter in the world. Number one women's fighter in the world for years. Now, when you look at the UFC website, it's Weili.
Yeah.
And it's a fight you never thought you... These are two of the most technical... Valentina is the most technical women's fighter on the planet. Weili is the most aggressive women's fighter on the planet. What she did to Tatiana Suarez, the undefeated prospect that everybody thought, oh, this is going to be too much. She's too big. Even for strawweight, Weili's not going to be able to handle her. Manhandled, dominated. Outside of the first round, wasn't even close. And you thought, oh my God, who is stopping this woman? And could Valentina be the one to stop it? Maybe.
Yeah,
probably. I'm
not going to say she is, but probably would be.
I don't want to give a prediction for this fight. I just want to see it play out. I'm going to be locked in front of my TV for 25 minutes.
For sure.
Yep.
I'm going to be locked into my TV for, at least 4 hours.
All right. And so we're going to – I'm so excited for this card. I'm so happy we got to go over all the history. Weili is really making herself an MSG resume.
Yeah, a little history of New York action.
Islam could also make history in MSG. Let's just go over a little predictions game real quick.
For sure.
So who do you got, Benil Dariush or Benoit Saint-Denis?
Benoit.
I think Benoit Saint-Denis will get it done, but I could see a world where Dariush somehow pulls a Benil Dariush and gets an insane victory out of it.
We're sticking to our guns.
I'll stick to my guns and go with Benoit Saint-Denis. Leon Edwards and Carlos Prates.
Prates, I said it before. Leon's got the writing on the wall, bro. It's over.
Leon's already hit the peak of his career. Mind you, they're only 2 years apart in age.
Age is a weird thing in UFC.
Age is really weird in UFC. When you have somebody like Leon Edwards, who has been in the company for 10 years, at this point, the only fight he lost before he went on his winning streak to beat Usman, do you know who's the only person he lost to in the UFC before Bilal? It was Usman.
Oh, yeah. I do remember
so
that.
He lost to Usman and went on a giant winning streak and then won the belt. When you're a guy like Leon Edwards at that point, where's the hunger anymore? You've done it. You've made it. You've had the title shots. You won the title. You won the title in the most upset way possible. Nobody saw that coming. The way you did it too. You were losing the entire time. You get one head kick. You defend the title in your home country. You defend the title against the guy that talked all the crap in the world about your father. And you lose to Bilal Muhammad in your home country again. And then you lose to Sean Brady in your home country again. At that point, it looks like he's lost the hunger.
Yeah, no hate, wrap it up, Twin. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. A little bit of wrap it up. He seems like, I know they said that's not the cut from what he is, not the cloth from which he is cut. But he did get lucky, and there's no saying that is not the cloth that he is, that's kind of the cloth that he was cut from during that fight. He got lucky in the fight. I mean, getting lucky is not a real thing in UFC, to be honest, because, listen, you're setting it up. You're getting it done. You're doing something. But he's the type of guy I could see saying, let's hang it up, bro. It's all right.
All right, and then we're going to move on to Sean Brady and Michael Morales. I want to hear your thoughts on this.
I'd probably go Sean Brady. I like Sean Brady. I really like Sean Brady. I have no great rationale for why I think he's going to win this.
So
Michael Morales is pretty fun.
So I've been watching Michael Morales has been I feel like he's not getting enough love from everybody.
Not enough love.
And
from
I don't
you,
know if it's
clearly.
I don't know if it's not it's not even just you either. It's from the fan base, I would say. Brady's been hyped up a lot recently.
I don't think he fights enough.
He does, but like it's when he does
well,
fight.
Now he is.
When he does fight, he's insane knockouts. He knocked out Burns in a round. He knocked out Magny in a round. He's had decisions against Matthews and Max Griffin. He's fought so many good guys, and he's been starching people as of late. He's undefeated, and you're not hearing from him. And a wise former UFC welterweight once said that the greatest thing the devil ever did was make you people believe he didn't exist. That is another CM Punk quote.
How are we having a CM Punk reference show?
You started it.
Yeah, I did start this.
But Michael Morales' greatest trick has just been staying under the radar. He is 26 years old. I think he's the future of this division right now.
Prove me wrong, Michael. Prove me wrong. Bro.
I think he's got this in the bag. I don't want to give a prediction for Valentina and Whaley. They don't have similar opponents. They haven't really fought anybody. Whaley's moving up. I just want to sit back and enjoy this with my own eyes.
You're going to be democratic about it. I'm not. I'm going to say Whaley is going to get it done.
Wow.
Listen, Valentina came in and dominated on Alexa Grasso.
Valentina's last fight, was a little close, too.
Too close for comfort.
Now
and Alexa Grasso, she lost. Obviously, she ended up dominating. But, listen, it ain't what it used to be. It ain't. And it's not. And I think Zhang Weili is, until further noticed, is what it used to be, kind of.
And finally, do I have everybody's attention now? The main event. Jack Della Maddalena and Islam Makhachev. Who you got, Ry?
I'm thinking Jack Della Maddalena because I think he has some good hands and he's big and it's time to see what a guy who's big and has good hands could do to him. Let's see.
I never go against a Dagestani.
I always do and I never win.
It's going to be an Islam Makhachev. This is something I said 3 years ago. And I said, you don't want to go against the Dagestanis. It is written in the stars. You don't want to go against Father's Plan, as Khabib would say.
I've been fighting Father's Plan forever. It's been an unsuccessful fight. And I have no self-awareness, and I'm not changing at all.
Islam Makhachev will have everyone's attention after Saturday in the GOAT conversation. And I think that's time to wrap it up.
Don't say it. No, yeah, we can wrap it up, though. Don't say that. I'm a hater of this. I'm a hater a little bit.
Yes, it seems like.
Yeah, it seems like we're going to wrap it up. I mean, I think we could talk about Islam Makhachev all day, but I mean, I'm just not quite sure who could possibly do it, and I hold on hope every single day that someone else could do it.
Somebody else will do it. All right, I'm Travis Hayden. I've been with Ryan. We have Ethan in the producer booth today.
Ethan on the sticks with us in spirit, though.
With us in spirit. This has been another episode of Pound for Pound. We'll see you next week.